Drake seemed to know his way around those mountains. The kid asked him about that when they paused to rest the horses an hour or so later.
I spent some time in these parts a few years ago, before they ever started building that damn prison. I was running from the law then, too. I
haven't seen anybody behind us.
No, they're back there. It's hard to follow a trail in country this rugged, but it's not impossible. Some of those guards Fletcher has working for him are supposed to be pretty good trackers.
We need to shake them off.
We will, don't worry. I know some trails not many others do, if you get my drift.
Alhu trails, you mean?
Don't sound so damn superior. You're every bit as much an outlaw as I am now, kid.
The kid glanced over at Gillian Fletcher. She was sitting on a log, her face pale and tear-streaked, but composed. She wasn't crying anymore. He nodded toward her.
You could tell her I'm not Bledsoe. She already halfway believes it.
What difference would that make? You think you could turn around and go back now? You put your life in that bad man's hands with nothing more to back up your story than the word of an escaped prisoner and hysterical girl you kidnapped? Who just happens to be the warden's daughter, I might add?
You're really not Ben Bledsoe?
That's right, he's not. But he's some gunfighter called Kid Morgan, who just happens to look a lot like Bledsoe. Tried to tell that to your pa, but high and mighty Warden Fletcher wouldn't believe him.
I wondered.
That's the reason I had to break out. The only way to prove I'm not Bledsoe is to find the real one and bring him back. Maybe then I can get on with my life.
I'm sorry. You mean my father did what he did to you for nothing?
Are you talking about the way he whipped me within an inch of my life?
Yes.
I couldn't tell him what he wanted to know. I don't have any idea where Bledsoe's loot is cached. He's going to have to ask the real Bledsoe if he wants to find out about that.
They moved on a short time later. Drake proved to be right about knowing the lonely trails. He led them through narrow gashes with rock walls rising more than 100 feet on either side of them. He took them across rock bridges that spanned dizzying chasms and made the kid glad the horses were sure-footed. Brush-choked ravines that appeared to be impassable had paths through them after all. Drake knew where to find them. It was a zigzagging course. By late afternoon, the kid estimated they'd ridden a good 30 miles, but Hellgate probably wasn't more than 10 or 15 miles behind him in a straight line. The kid's belly was empty. He wouldn't have thought he'd miss that greasy stew so much. He hadn't gotten breakfast that morning, he reminded himself. There were plenty of creeks in the mountains, so they wouldn't go thirsty. But the lack of supplies might prove to be a problem.
We have to find something to eat. Maybe we could trap a rabbit or something.
Don't worry. You ought to know by now, kid. I've always got a plan.
Well, if you do, I'd like to know what it is.
I haven't been just leading us around these mountains at random. I had a destination in mind as soon as we left Hell Gate. There's a cabin in a little valley about a mile from here where the gents in my line of work stop over from time to time.
You're talking about a hideout.
Yeah, you call it what you want. Fellas who use it leave some supplies there if they can. There'll be jerky, canned peaches, things like that that'll keep. No lawman knows about it. The girl's pa sure as hell doesn't. We can spend the night there safely.
All right. That sounds pretty good.
They rode on, with Drake continuing to lead the way. Dusk was settling down over the rugged peaks around them when they topped a little rise and looked down into the narrow valley Drake had mentioned. The kid could barely make out the cabin. It was tucked into a stand of trees and blended in with them. He could believe that no lawman knew about the hideout in that high, lonesome country. But somebody sure did, he realized, because a thin thread of gray smoke rose from the stone chimney, almost but not quite completely blending in with the graying sky. There were horses in the pole corral built onto the side of the cabin. The kid saw them moving around a little. Drake could see everything that the kid did.
Well, well. Looks like we're gonna have to share.
And then he looked pointedly over at Gillian Fletcher. Gillian saw the look and shrank back against the kid, her face going taut with fear.
Forget it. We'll find some other place to hole up.
There isn't any other place. It's not around here. Take it easy, kid. I know what I'm doing. The girl's gonna be a distraction, that's all.
What are you talking about?
There are 4 or 5 horses in that corral. I don't know about you, but I don't like 2-to-1 odds. We're gonna have to have some sort of advantage. She's it.
You... You're gonna trade me to them?
No, not exactly. Morgan, tear her dress so they can get a good look at one shoulder.
What?
I'd do it myself, but you'd probably take offense and start a ruckus. We want these old boys in that cabin looking at Miss Fletcher, not at us. That way we can get the drop on them. We'll tie them up for the night, then in the morning we can take their guns and some of their supplies and leave them with just a couple of horses so they'll have to ride double. That way they can't come after us.
All right. She can do the tearing herself. Is that all right with you, Miss Fletcher?
You want me to tear my clothes?
Sorry. Like Drake said, it'll help us to get the drop on those men without a lot of shooting and killing.
All right, if you think it's best.
She tugged on the fabric, but it proved stubborn enough that in the end, the kid had to help her rip it, so the dress hung loose from a bared shoulder.
How's that?
Well, might be better if a little more skin was showing, but I reckon it'll do. Now, here's how we'll handle it. You walk down there and stop outside the cabin, miss. Morgan and I'll circle around and get on the other side of it. You yell for help. When those men look out and see you standing there, they'll come out and see what's going on. Then Morgan and I'll throw down on them and make them drop their guns.
You're trusting me not to run away?
Where are you gonna run to? We're miles from the prison and farther than that from any town. There's nobody up in these mountains except panthers and bears and outlaws, and night is coming on. You wouldn't make it until morning, Miss Fletcher. Your best bet is to stay alive to cooperate with us.
All right. I'll do it.
Now, you're being smart. Give us about 5 minutes to get in position. Kid, you take the left. I'll take the right. There's enough trees all around that cabin to let us get pretty close.
I understand.
He stayed in the saddle and helped Jillian down from the horse. She looked up at him worriedly.
You'll be fine. I promise you. You'd be a whole hell of a lot worse off with those hombres than you are with us.
I know.
Let's go. We don't want to lose all the light. Don't make any more noise than you have to, Morgan.
The kid nodded and turned his horse. He moved off to the left along the rise and began angling down into the valley on the course that would take him to the side of the cabin. He wanted to look back at Jillian, but he didn't. She had a part to play in this game too, and she would have to play it well for any of them to survive. The kid concentrated on approaching the cabin stealthily. When he was still a good 100 yards away, he moved closer on foot after tying the horse's reins to a sapling. He stopped behind a thick-trunked pine about 20 feet from the front corner of the cabin. The daylight continued to fade, but enough remained that he could see Jillian making her way down the hill. She moved quickly, stumbling a little when she glanced back over her shoulder as if afraid someone was after her. The kid smiled faintly in admiration. The young woman had sand, no doubt about that, and she was smart. If one of the owl hoots in the cabin spotted her, he would think she was running away from somebody. Her bare shoulder gleamed in the dusk as she came panting to a halt in front of the cabin, a good 50 feet from the door.
Hello? Is anybody in there? If there is, you have to help me. Please, help me.
The kid saw the cabin door swing open. A scruffy-looking man in range clothes stepped out, gun in hand. A ginger-colored beard jutted from his chin. The man swung his gun up.
Hold it right there, miss. Who are you? What in blazes are you doing out here in the middle of nowhere?
You have to help me. I'm lost. My horse threw me and I've been wandering in the woods for hours and I think something was chasing me. It sounded like a bear.
You're alone?
Of course. I got separated from the rest of my party. They were hunting and I don't know where they are.
Some rich folks out on a hunting expedition, huh?
That's right.
Yeah. I bet your friends are mighty worried about you. They'd probably pay a pretty penny to get you back safe and sound.
That's right. I'm sure there would be a reward.
Come on out, fellas.
The bearded outlaw lowered his gun. He'd obviously decided Jillian didn't represent a threat.
Look what Lady Luck done dropped right in her laps.
He walked closer to her. She retreated a step.
You won't hurt me, will you?
Hurt you? Oh, honey. We would never hurt a pretty little gal like you. We're gonna take real good care of you until we can get you back to your folks.
Leering, he looked back over his shoulder at his three companions who'd come out of the cabin.
Ain't that right, fellas?
The three men crowded up behind him, clearly eager to get a better look at Jillian. Their guns were holstered, and as the four of them approached her, the first man pouched his iron, too. The kid knew he wouldn't get a better chance. He stepped out from behind the tree, leveling his rifle at the four outlaws.
Hold it! Drop your guns!
They spun toward the sound of his voice, hands clawing at their holstered revolvers. The kid expected them to freeze once they saw that he had the drop on them, but if they didn't, he would open fire, and Drake would, too. Drake didn't wait. One of the outlaws pitched forward as a .44-40 slug smashed into his back.
Kill him!
The kid's sights were leveled on the chest of the ginger-bearded outlaw. The kid's bullet drove itself deep into his chest. Swinging the rifle toward the two men who were still threats, the kid jacked the lever and fired again. From the corner of his eye, he saw that Jillian had spun around and was running away, getting out of the line of fire. He levered and fired. Acrid powder smoke stung the kid's nose as he stopped firing and lowered the rifle a little to peer over the barrel. All four of the outlaws were on the ground, lying motionless. A couple of them had guns in their hands, but none of them even had a chance to get off a shot. He looked toward the spot where Jillian had been. He saw her figure disappearing into the shadows gathering on the hillside that overlooked the cabin.
She's getting away! Go get her, kid!
Drake was covering the four owl hoots in case any of them was still alive. The kid broke into a run, his long legs carrying him across the clearing in front of the cabin and up the slope after Jillian.
Miss Fletcher! Jillian! Stop, it's all right!
She kept going. He supposed, after everything she had been through, the terrible crash of gun thunder had been too much for her. She was running blindly, trying to get away from her fear. He caught up with her before she reached the top of the rise. With a lunge, he wrapped his free arm around her waist and hauled her to a stop. She fought him, twisting in his grip.
No! Leave me alone!
Miss Fletcher, stop! It's me, Kid Morgan!
Mr. Morgan?
Yes, it's me. You're all right. The shooting is over. Nothing's going to happen to you.
Oh.
She sagged against him, her muscles going limp. Her head rested on his chest. He felt the rapid beating of her heart like that of a bird held captive in the hand.
I thought I was going to die. All that shooting.
You were out of the line of fire, for the most part. But you did good to get farther away. We need to go back now.
I thought you were going to take those men prisoner.
So did I. To be fair, though, he didn't start shooting until they had reached for their guns.
The kid steered her down the slope.
Let's go. According to Drake, there'll be food in the cabin.
I couldn't eat. Not after everything I've seen today.
You have to. You need to keep your strength up.
Why? It would be simpler to just starve to death.
You feel like that now. People can go through a lot, though, and deep down, they still want to live.
By the time they got back to the cabin, Drake had dragged the carcasses into a row and stripped them of their gun belts, which he had looped over his shoulder.
Good, you found her.
I thought we were going to tie them up and leave some supplies and a couple of horses in the morning.
Well, they wanted to make a fight of it. I figured it'd be better if we obliged them. Go on inside. There's coffee on the stove, and beans and salt pork cooking as well. We'll eat good tonight, kid. Better than we have in a long time.
What are you going to do with the bodies?
Well, there's a ravine over yonder a little ways. Looks like I can dump them in it and then cave in the bank on top of them. That's the closest we're going to come to being able to bury them.
Well, it'll have to do.
The kid ushered Jillian toward the door.
You need any help?
No, I'll take care of it. You keep an eye on Miss Fletcher. Take a look around in there and see if you can find any clothes that'll fit us.
The kid and Jillian went inside.
I'd like to get rid of these prison duds.
The kid agreed with that sentiment wholeheartedly. As he closed the door, he saw that Drake was already pulling the boots off the feet of the dead outlaws. The smell of Arbuckle's brewing, along with the aroma of beans and pork, made the kid's mouth water. Jillian still insisted she didn't want anything, but when he found a reasonably clean tin cup and poured some coffee in it, she took it and sipped from it gratefully. Two Winchesters, an old Henry rifle, and a heavy-caliber Sharps carbine leaned in a corner. The Sharps was much like the rifle that Philip Bearpaw had given the kid more than a year earlier. It seemed like a lifetime ago, and he knew he'd probably never see that particular weapon again. It was long gone, along with his horse, his colt, and all his other gear. But as long as a man was still alive, he could start over, and that was what the kid intended to do. He poured a cup of coffee for himself and sipped it as he began going through the saddlebags stacked on the rough-hewn table that was the biggest piece of furniture in the single-room cabin. In addition to the table and the wood-burning stove, there were a couple of chairs, a crate and an empty keg that could also serve as seats, and four crude bunks, one on each wall. There was certainly nothing fancy about the place, but an owl hoot on the run from the law wouldn't care about fancy. The kid found several spare shirts in the outlaw's gear that looked like they'd fit him and Drake, as well as a pair of denim trousers for each of them. As Drake had predicted, there was also a good stock of provisions on hand. It would keep them going for a while. Drake came in a short time later carrying the boots and hats he'd taken from the dead men. He dumped the boots on the floor and the hats on the table.
Take your pick, kid. It'd be good to dress like a normal hombre again instead of a prisoner.
Amen to that.
The kid picked up one of the hats, a pearl gray Stetson, and checked the inside of it for anything crawling before he settled it on his head.
How's that look?
Very dashing.
Drake chose a dark brown hat with a concho-studded band. Jillian turned her back while the two men went through the clothes and picked out and tried on what they wanted. The kid settled for a faded blue bib front shirt. The jeans were a little short, but they would do. He found a pair of black high-top boots that fit fairly well and tucked the trouser legs down in them. Nobody could tell they were short. One of the gun belts Drake had brought in fit well enough. Having the weight of a sturdy Colt revolver on his hip made the kid feel better than he had in weeks. He supposed it was a sad commentary on a man's life when he had to be packing a shooting iron in order to feel fully dressed, but there it was. He grasped the gun butt and moved the weapon up and down in the leather. It drew smooth and didn't catch on anything. Drake pulled on a flannel shirt and a brown vest. One of the outlaws had preferred a cross-draw rig, and Drake chose it to buckle around his waist. The holstered Colt rode on his left hip, butt forward. Men who had mastered that draw were usually very fast and slick with it, but the kid liked a more traditional draw. By the time they were outfitted, it was fully dark outside. The room was lit by a couple of stubby candles set in tin plates on the table. The kid checked the beans and salt pork, found they were done, and dished up bowls for all three of them. Jillian picked at her food, but finally wound up eating most of what he gave her. He and Drake tore into the food with good appetites. They washed it down with swigs of the hot black coffee.
I'm sorry about the way you were treated, Mr. Morgan. I'm sure my father really believed you were that man Bledsoe, or he wouldn't have done the things he did. You really do bear an amazing resemblance to him, you know.
Lady's right, kid. You do.
Well, it would have been fine with me if I'd gone my whole life without discovering that.
Trouble usually seeks out folks whether they're looking for it or not.
We better take turns standing watch tonight.
I'm not going to try to get away, if that's what you're worried about. I know I couldn't survive up here in the mountains by myself, especially not at night.
That's not what I was thinking of. If Carl knew about this cabin, it stands to reason that other men do, too. We don't want to be surprised like the, previous occupants were.
Do you mean other outlaws? You're right. Somebody could show up expecting to make themselves at home. We ought to be ready if they do.
You can have whichever watch you want.
I'll take the first one. I reckon I'm still a mite stronger than you, kid, so you need some sleep first. I'll wake you an hour or two after midnight.
All right. Tomorrow morning, we can pack up some of these supplies and head out. We'll be going our separate ways.
Not hardly.
What do you mean?
We're sticking together, kid.
There's no need for that. We agreed that we'd help each other escape, but now that we're out, I'm going to track down Bledsoe and prove that I'm not him.
Exactly. And I can give you a hand with that because, well, it just so happens, I know where Bledsoe was going when he busted out of Hell's Gate.
You never said anything about that before, back in Hades.
You never played your cards close to your vest, Morgan? I wanted out of that place. And if I'd spilled everything I knew at once, you wouldn't have any reason to let me string along with you. You could have double-crossed me, just like Bledsoe did.
You didn't say anything about that, either.
Here's the way it is. The reason I knew how Bledsoe busted out of Hell's Gate was because we worked out the plan together. I found that chimney in the cliff, and I told him how he could use it to get out. We agreed that I'd go with him, and when he went to get that loot of his, I'd have a share of it coming to me.
But he escaped on his own without telling you he was going.
That's right. He promised me a payoff and then cheated me on it. Because he already knew what he needed to know. No offense, Morgan, but that's why I didn't tell you how we were getting out until we were ready to go. I couldn't take a chance on you being a treacherous son of a bitch like Bledsoe.
How do you know where he was going after he escaped?
While we were still working out the details, He let it slip that he intended to head to a certain place, let's say, after he picked up the money he had stashed. Said he had friends out there, including a girl he wanted to see again. Made it sound like he's gonna stay for a while. He thought he'd be safe there.
But you're not ready to say where that certain place is, are you?
Hell no. But I'll take you there.
Because you still want that share of Bledsoe's loot?
Nope. Since he double-crossed me, I've decided I want all of it. All of it that's left, anyway.
That money rightfully belongs to other people. The people Bledsoe stole it from in the first place.
Yeah, other people I don't know and don't give a damn about. Anyway, most of it came from the banks and the railroads, and nobody cares about them.
Why did you throw in with me?
No, I figured two men would stand a better chance of getting out of there. Then once they were out, they'd be more likely to be able to settle Bledsoe's hash. Besides that, you've got an even stronger motive than I do for tracking him down. As long as he's free, you're a fugitive too. So you see, however much of Bledsoe's loot I can get my hands on is my price for helping you clear your name, kid. That seems fair enough, doesn't it?
I suppose so. I don't have much choice in the matter, do I?
Well, you can try to pick up Bledsoe's trail on your own, I reckon. But finding him that way might take you weeks, or months, even years. You might never find him. And you never know when some bounty hunter or small town law dog might recognize you and start shooting. I can promise you the bounty on your head's gonna be dead or alive, kid. Dead or alive. Or you can play along with me, and I can take you right to where Bledsoe was headed in about a week. He's had time to recover that money by now, so chances are that's where he'll be. Your choice, kid. Maybe years as a fugitive, or a week's ride to the showdown.
You've got a deal, Drake.
Good. You won't be sorry.
There's just one thing we have to figure out. What are we going to do with Miss Fletcher?
I can answer that. I'm going with you.
Now, I'm not sure that's such a good idea.
Forget it. The first settlement we come to, we're going to ride close enough to leave you just outside town where you'll be safe.
No. I feel terrible about what my father did to you, Mr. Morgan. It was completely unfair. I want to make it up to you, and I'm going to do that by helping you find Bledsoe.
No offense, but that's the craziest thing I ever heard.
Not at all. What are you going to do when you find Bledsoe?
Take him back to Hellgate and force your father to admit that I'm not who he thought I was?
That's all well and good, but what if that's not possible?
I think I see where you're going with this. Something could have happened to Bledsoe.
Exactly. Men die violently out here all the time. Someone could have shot him, or an animal could have attacked him. Not only that, but say he made it safely to wherever it is Mr. Drake thinks he went. He's not going to just surrender and agree to come along peacefully when you show up, Mr. Morgan.
Lady's got a point. Bledsoe could easily wind up dead once we're through with him.
So then I'd be able to testify that I saw the two of you with my own eyes. My father might not want to believe it, but he wouldn't have much choice except to do so.
Do you really think you could convince him? He seemed like a pretty stubborn man to me.
I can convince him. Believe me, Mr. Morgan. Your chances of clearing your name will be better if I come along. And my conscience will be a little clearer, too. Although I doubt if anything I do can wipe away the stain of my father's brutal actions.
He was the one with the whip, not you. You don't have any call to feel guilty about it.
He might not have been quite so angry to start with if I hadn't played that trick on him. My mother really did want to see him that day, but I hung back on purpose because I knew the guards were bringing you to his office. I wanted to see you again. I was curious about you.
All right. Just to be clear, though, I think this is a bad idea. I still think we ought to leave you someplace safe as soon as we can.
It'll work out for the best, Mr. Morgan. You'll see.
If you're going to be riding with us, maybe you'd better start calling me Kid.
All right. I can do that.
Well, you can't ride all the way to wherever it is we're going dressed like that.
One of the men who was staying here before, I noticed he was on the small side. I might be able to find a shirt and a pair of pants that belonged to him. They'd still be too big, but I could roll up the sleeves and the legs and maybe get by with them.
Help yourself to anything you want.
We got 6 horses now. I took the 2 we brought from Hellgate into the corral with the others. That means we each have a couple mounts. Now we could switch back and forth to keep them fairly fresh. That'll let us move a little faster. And we can get where we're going in about a week, I'm sure of it.
7 days to a showdown, the kid thought. 7 days until he confronted the man whose resemblance to him had landed him in Hades, literally as well as figuratively. In all likelihood, 7 days until more of the bloodshed and death that seemed to follow him everywhere he went. The kid slept lightly that night while Carl Drake was standing guard. He didn't fully trust Drake, although if the man was telling the truth about everything, he had no reason to double-cross the kid. They needed each other in order to get what they both wanted. Julian Fletcher was the wild card. Being around a beautiful woman made it difficult for some men to act logically and in their own best interests. So far, Drake hadn't shown any signs of being interested in her as anything except a potential hostage if pursuit from the prison caught up to them, but there was always a chance he'd been hiding his true feelings. As for the kid, he didn't have any romantic feelings for her. Even if he had been ready to move on with that part of his life, which he wasn't, the fact that Jillian's father was such a sadistic bastard would have squelched any feelings of affection he might have toward her. The kid wasn't going to forget that whipping anytime soon. The night passed peacefully, although while he was awake and standing his turn on guard duty, he noticed how restless Jillian's slumber was. She tossed and turned and made little noises as if her sleep was haunted by nightmares. It probably was, considering everything that had happened to her and all the violence she had witnessed in the past 24 hours. Before dawn the next morning, he started coffee brewing and began frying up some flapjacks and bacon. The smells woke both Jillian and Drake.
I need to step outside.
Fine, but I'm going with you.
I'm not going to run off, Mr. Drake. I told you, I want to go with the both of you and help Mr. Morgan clear his name.
Yeah, I know, but at this time of morning, there are liable to be bears or mountain lions wandering around out there. Look, I'll give you as much privacy as I can, but you're liable to want somebody with a rifle close by.
Oh, I see. In that case, thank you.
They went outside and came back a few minutes later. The kid hadn't heard any sort of ruckus and assumed no varmints had interrupted anything. The coffee was ready, so he poured it into tin cups from the gear of the dead outlaws. After breakfast, the kid and Drake went out to look over the horses. The mounts that had belonged to the dead outlaws appeared to be good ones. Jillian stayed in the cabin to look through the clothes and try to find something more suitable for riding. A short time later, she came out dressed in jeans and a flannel shirt. The shirt sleeves were rolled up several turns, as were the trouser legs, but other than that, the clothes seemed to fit fairly well. She had donned the boots that had belonged to the smallest of the outlaws and held a battered black hat in her hands. When she piled her auburn hair on top of her head and then put the hat on, it fit fairly well.
How do I look?
Oh, not quite like a man, but at a distance you might pass for one.
Is that a good thing?
It is when the authorities are looking for two men and a woman. Posse would be less likely to pay attention to three men.
Oh, I understand. Should I have a gun?
There'll be a rifle in your saddle boot. Have you ever shot a handgun?
Well, no.
You're better off without one, then. You'd be liable to shoot yourself or one of us.
All right. When are we leaving?
As soon as we can pack up all the gear and supplies we're taking with us.
30 minutes later, they were on the horses and ready to ride.
I'll bring up the rear with the extra horses. Drake, you take the lead since you know where we're going. Miss Fletcher, you can ride between us. That'll be the safest spot for you.
You told me to call you Kid. If I'm going to do that, you have to call me Jillian.
All right, Jillian.
Let's go.
They set out, Drake leading the way along a twisting path that serpentined its way up the mountain. The landscape around them was wild and lonely, which came as no surprise to the kid. Men who rode the Owl Hoot trails spent a lot of their time as far from civilization as possible. The day was as long and hard on Jillian as the kid had worried it would be. She didn't make any complaint, but every time they called a halt to rest the horses, he saw the way she bit her lip to stifle a groan of pain as she dismounted. Her face was pale and drawn. They switched horses at midday, ate a cold meal of flapjacks and bacon left over from breakfast, and moved on. It was impossible to travel very fast in those rugged mountains. By the time they made camp that night, the kid estimated they'd gone less than 20 miles. But it was that many more miles between him and Hellgate Prison, he told himself. The best thing about the day was that they hadn't seen any signs of pursuit. It would be pushing their luck to think they had already given the slip to the search parties Fletcher must have sent after them, but that appeared to be the case. After everything that had happened during the past few weeks, he would take all the luck he could get, however improbable. Drake had found a secluded glade high on the shoulder of a mountain, not far below a pass. He reined in.
Oh, this is as good a place as any, I reckon.
Jillian couldn't hold back her reaction as she swung down from her horse.
Ow!
She slumped against the animal and clung to the stirrup to keep from collapsing as her legs tried to fold up beneath her. The kid had already dismounted. Quickly, he stepped over to her and grasped her arm to steady her.
It'll get better.
When? I didn't know it was possible to hurt this much.
Well, it'll take a few days.
Is there anything that will help it?
Maybe some liniment, if we had any, which we don't.
Oh, a dollop of this here whiskey in your coffee tonight will make you feel a little better.
I'll take it.
She let go of the horse and, with the kid's help, tottered over to a large flat rock where she sat down.
Oh. I'd like to help make camp, but I don't think I can right now. I'm not sure I can even move again.
Don't worry about it.
Yes, but I don't want you to think I'm not pulling my weight.
Just help me clear my name. That's all I want from you, Jillian.
The kid and Drake took turns standing watch again that night. Jillian was restless once more, most likely from sore muscles. The whiskey in her coffee might have helped, but it couldn't make the aches go away entirely. She would hurt even worse in the morning, when those muscles had had a chance to stiffen up. Sure enough, the kid had to help her to her feet when it came time to rise. She hobbled around the camp like she was 100 years old.
Maybe you've changed your mind about coming with us all the way to where we're going.
No, I haven't. I'll be fine.
Suit yourself.
A short time later, they mounted up and pushed on. Jillian insisted she didn't need any help and managed to get in the saddle by herself. She was a tough young woman, the kid thought, but with Jonas Fletcher as her father, it wasn't surprising. She would have to be tough to survive being raised by a man like that. They rode through the high pass, and the view in both directions was incredible. Miles and miles of the rugged New Mexico landscape spread out before and behind them. The blue dome of the sky arched over snow-capped gray peaks and deep green valleys. The world appeared new, just born, untouched by man's violent hand. The kid knew how deceptive that was. Death often lurked behind the beauty. The man who let himself be lulled into believing the world was a peaceful, pristine place wouldn't live very long. Savagery went hand in hand with tranquility and could strike at any time without warning. Thrusting those gloomy thoughts out of his head, he started down from the pass with his companions.
We're still heading west.
That's right, we are. Trying to figure out where we're headed, kid?
Just curious, that's all.
Yeah, well, you'll find out soon enough. You'll be face to face with old Bloody Ben before you know it.
The day couldn't come soon enough to suit the kid. The three riders and the extra horses moved through the pass. An hour later, they were far enough down the mountain that they could no longer see the pass, even if they had turned around in their saddles to look. No one was watching as a lone man on horseback, leading a pack animal, rode through the gap in the peaks and took the same westward trail. On the seventh day, after escaping from Hellgate Prison, the three riders drew rein atop a low, rocky ridge.
There it is. Gehenna, Arizona.
The kid rested his hands on his saddle horn and leaned forward in the leather. A few days earlier, he had finally taken the time to shave with a razor he'd found in one of the saddlebags. Now that he'd scraped off the whiskers, his face was all hard planes and angles again. His skin had been pale at first, but it was acquiring a healthy tan once more.
Let me get this straight. We've come from Hades to Gehenna?
That's right. Bledsoe said that was one reason he had a soft spot in his heart for this place. Said he'd lived like a devil all his life, so it was fitting that he came from a town called Gehenna.
The place of punishment.
It doesn't look like much.
Gehenna wasn't impressive, that was true, even as frontier settlements went. Its only street stretched for 5 blocks, lined with a dusty, sun-bleached mixture of buildings. Several dozen adobe dwellings were scattered haphazardly around the town's business district of frame buildings. A creek with banks dotted by scrubby mesquite trees meandered past the southern edge of the settlement. The landscape had changed dramatically from the mountains of New Mexico where their journey had begun. The kid figured the peaks looming in a bluish-gray line several miles to the south were in Mexico, since Gehenna wasn't far from the border. The terrain in the area was flat, except for some occasional rolling hills and long, shallow ridges, like the one on which the three riders had reined to a halt. The sandy, semi-arid plains stretched as far as the eye could see to the north, east, and west.
Why is there even a town here? There's not a railroad or any other reason I can see for anyone to settle in such a godforsaken place.
I'm just going by what Bledsoe told me, you understand. There's supposed to be several big ranches over there in Mexico, as well as some gold and silver mines in the mountains. This is actually the closest place for the Dons who own those haciendas to get supplies, and their vaqueros come here to blow some steam off. The mines are owned by Americans, and they send their ore out by mule train to Tucson. The trail comes right through here, so between the vaqueros, the mule skinners, and the American pistoleros hired by the miners to guard those ore shipments, Gehenna is full of tough hombres. It's a wide-open town. People who live there make most of their money off various forms of vice, if you know what I mean.
Bledsoe must have talked a lot about this place.
What else was there to do in Hades?
So, what do we do now? Ride in and start asking people if they've seen Bledsoe?
Oh, that's a good plan, if you want to get shot in the back.
Well, I don't know anything about tracking down an outlaw.
It'll be dark in a little while. Probably best to wait until then before we ride in.
That's right. But you'll be the only one riding in, kid. Bledsoe spotted me, he'd recognize me right away.
He won't recognize me? I'm the one who's supposed to look so much like him.
Yeah, but he doesn't know you exist, so he won't be expecting to see anybody who looks like him. He won't be on the lookout for you, so to speak. Now that you've shaved off that beard, the resemblance will be even less. If he sees you, I mean, he might think you look a little familiar, but he won't know you.
What about me?
He saw you at Hell Gate, didn't he?
Yes, I suppose so.
He'll remember you. Men don't forget a beautiful woman.
I'm not very beautiful now. Sunburned and dressed in men's clothes and covered with trail dust.
There's too big a chance he might spot you. I'll go in and have a look around first. Once I've gotten the lay of the land, we can rendezvous and figure out how to proceed from there.
All right. It sounds like this could take a while.
It could.
Oh, I was looking forward to a hot bath. It seems like a year since I've had one.
You'll have to wait a while longer, I'm afraid.
We better find a place to camp where we won't be in such easy view of the town.
What about those trees over there by that wash?
Yeah. Looks like there's a little bowl there where we could build a fire without it being seen.
A short time later, they came to a grove of cottonwoods next to a dry wash. No water flowed in the arroyo at the moment, but every time it rained, a torrent likely rushed through, providing enough moisture for the roots of the trees to take hold. A little grass grew, so the horses would have some graze. The kid and Drake unsaddled and picketed the animals with some help from Jillian, who was growing more experienced in such things. She lent a hand around camp, which she hadn't been able to do starting out. She caught a moment alone with the kid while Drake was working with the horses.
I'm a little worried about staying out here alone with Mr. Drake.
He's treated you proper so far.
Yes, that's true, but you've always been close by, kid. He wouldn't try anything as long as you're around.
I wouldn't be so sure about that. I don't think he's scared of me, if that's what you mean.
Maybe not, but he respects your abilities. That's the reason he brought you along. He thinks you can help him get what he wants from Bledsoe.
As long as we both get what we want, that's all right.
I just wish I was going into town with you.
Maybe you can, in a day or two. I'll have to see if Bledsoe is still in these parts first, and if he is, where he spends most of his time. We might be able to sneak you into town and get you into a hotel room or something like that. Maybe even get you that hot bath.
I would be eternally grateful for that.
Drake came along then, so they cut the conversation short. He had his arms full of dry cottonwood branches.
While you two were gabbing, I got us some firewood.
They built a tiny fire, cooked biscuits and bacon, and heated up some leftover beans. The kid knew he could wait until he rode into Gehenna and get a real meal. But that didn't seem fair, so he ate the same trail grub as his companions. The sky turned a darker blue, then purple and black by stages. Stars winked into existence. The moon was still down, but would rise later. Drake let the fire burn down to embers.
I reckon it's late enough for you to start into town, kid.
I was thinking the same thing. Do you have any idea where I should start looking for Bledsoe? Any place he ever mentioned where he'd like to spend time?
He talked about a cat house called Rosarita's. Begging your pardon for being crude, Miss Fletcher.
Think nothing of it, Mr. Drake. I was about to suggest that Mr. Morgan begin his search wherever there are whores and whiskey, since those are the things men care the most about.
Got any advice?
Yeah. Don't get yourself killed first thing. In other words, stay out of trouble that don't concern us.
You think I'm liable to run into anything like that?
In Gehenna? I'd say the odds are pretty good. Or pretty bad, depending on how you look at it.
Well, steer clear of any ruckuses that break out. I'm just looking for Bledsoe, that's all.
That's right. Good luck, kid.
When the kid turned to Jillian, she put her arms around him and hugged him before he could stop her.
Be careful, kid. Don't let anything happen to you.
Don't worry about me. I may be back out here by tonight. If I can't make it, I'll be back by tomorrow night at the latest.
As gently as possible, he disengaged himself from Jillian's arms and mounted up. Without looking back, he rode out of the little hollow and headed toward Gehenna, which was a scattering of yellow lights and a vast darkness along the border. The kid tugged the brim of his hat down lower over his face as he reached the eastern end of the street. He kept the horse moving at a slow, deliberate walk, as if he were just a drifting cowpoke, not going any place in particular and in no hurry to get there. A stocky Mexican in a big straw sombrero sat on the driver's seat of a wagon parked in front of the general store. The kid veered his horse closer to the wagon and gave the driver a curt nod.
Evening, amigo. You know where I can find a place called Rosarita's?
Si, senor. In the next block, on the right.
Much obliged.
He heeled the horse into motion. Rosarita's was a two-story adobe structure, one of the largest buildings in town. A balcony with a wooden railing hung over the boardwalk in front. The hitch rails in front of the whorehouse were crowded. The kid studied the rigs on the horses through narrowed eyes. Some of the saddles were American, the sort of functional rigs favored by working cowboys. Others were fancier, decorated with fringe and silver ornaments. Those would belong to the vaqueros from the other side of the border. The kid found an empty spot, swung down, and looped the horse's reins around the rail. He went up the two steps to the boardwalk and started past an old blind man. The man turned his head toward the sound of the kid's footsteps.
Don't, senor.
The kid paused. The kid stepped back and his hand went to the butt of the holstered Colt on his hip. He was ready to hook and draw if any of the shots came his way. The roaring volley lasted only a few seconds. Then an eerie silence fell over the night. There was movement in the whorehouse. A man stepped up to the doorway and brushed aside the beaded curtain. He wore a flat-crowned black hat, a black vest, and leather wrist cuffs over a white shirt, and black whipcord trousers. His clean-shaven face looked like it had been whittled out of hardwood. As he stepped out, he spotted the kid standing on the porch and froze.
Looking for trouble, friend?
Not hardly.
That's a smart answer. Do I know you?
I don't think so. I just rode into town about a minute ago. Never been here before.
Yeah, well, I've been lots of other places. But I reckon you just look a little like somebody I know. Forget it. Let's go, boys.
Three men followed him out of the whorehouse and down the steps to the horses lined up at the hitch rails. One was a lean, hatchet-faced man in range clothes. One was a dandy with the long, slim fingers of a gambler. And the last man out the door was huge and had long blonde hair and a beard. He reminded Kid of pictures he had seen in books about Vikings. That is, if Vikings had worn fringed buckskins. All of them eyed the kid coldly as they passed him. He knew he was looking at a band of killers. The four men mounted up and galloped off.
They are gone, no?
They're gone.
You are fortunate that they already vented their killing rage, amigo. If you had gone inside, you might be dead too.
Or some of them might be.
You have the fire in your belly, no?
I don't run away from a fight. You knew hell was about to break loose in there, didn't you? How did you know?
Because I cannot see, you mean? When the eyes go, the other senses strengthen to take their place. I heard the angry words and knew that Señor Craig and his friends would have to spill blood.
Craig was the first one who came out?
Si, Alonzo Craig. You have heard of him?
I've heard of him. He's a gunman. What about the other three?
J.P. Malone, a man with a face like an axe. Clyde Woods, with the fancy clothes and the face of a man who seldom sees the sun. And the big one, the young giant, I know only as Dakota Pete.
That's them, all right. How do you know what they look like?
I have asked people to describe them to me. I know what many of the people in this town look like. I know what the girls who work in Rosarita's look like. And I know the soft warmth of their breasts. Because from time to time, they take pity on an old blind fool.
What's your name, old-timer?
They call me only Viejo. I had another name once, but it no longer matters.
Viejo, old man. It fit all right, the kid thought.
What happened in there?
What happens all too often now. Men argued, and men died.
The argument was over a woman?
What else? Although, if it had not been that, it would have been something else. Men such as Craig seek any excuse to spill blood. Death is like air and wine to them.
Where did they go? It didn't sound like they went very far.
Not far. To Senor Harrison's saloon.
Who's Harrison?
Craig and the others work for him. They enforce his will on the town.
What about a man called Bledsoe? Is he here in Gehenna?
A friend of yours, amigo?
I've never met him, but I need to talk to him.
Regretfully, I cannot help you. I know nothing of this hombre, Bledsoe.
The kid's spirit sank a little. The old-timer seemed to know everybody and everything about Gehenna. If he said Bledsoe wasn't there, it was a strong possibility the fugitive from Hellgate had never made it that far. Something could have happened to Bledsoe on the way, or he could have simply decided to go somewhere else, despite what he had told Carl Drake. Either way, it meant the long trip from New Mexico had been for nothing. It was too soon to give up, the kid told himself, regardless of what the old man said. According to Drake, Bledsoe had been a regular customer at Rosarita's. He ought to at least go inside and ask around.
Señor, please.
What is it?
I would like to touch your face and let my fingers see you as only they can.
All right.
Viejo stood up and moved closer to the kid. He was a head shorter, but he reached up and unerringly touched the kid's cheek with his fingertips. His hand was dry and scaly, like the skin of a lizard, as he moved it across the younger man's features.
Madre de Dios! El Diablo! You have the face of Satan himself.
That's the first time anybody's ever said that about me.
You should leave this place. Nothing good can come of you being here.
Sorry, old-timer. I won't be riding out until I'm good and ready. I've got business to take care of here in Gehenna.
The devil's business.
Maybe.
The kid stepped past the old man and went into the whorehouse. He found three women on their knees, silently crying next to the bullet-riddled corpses of three men. Two Mexicans and one American. The mourning women were all Mexican, as were the others who stood around watching. They wore silk robes and not much else. One of the women climbed to her feet and threw herself at a man who stood by with a worried frown on his face.
Why did you not stop them? Why?
How could I stop them? If I'd got in the middle of that, Harrison's butchers would have cut me down too.
The kid pegged the man as the whorehouse's bouncer, whose job was to handle customers who got too drunk or started being too rough with the soiled doves. Interfering with professional gunmen like Craig and the others would be beyond his capabilities.
I'm sorry, Julieta.
The woman stepped back and covered her face with her hands.
Brady, have you sent for the undertaker?
Yes, ma'am, I sure did. He ought to be here soon.
Good. The ladies will be able to gain control of themselves easier once the bodies are out of here.
The lady on the stairs turned her head to look at the kid. No one else in the room seemed to have noticed him as he stood just inside the doorway.
Who are you?
She seemed to be in charge, which probably meant she was Rosarita. The kid kept the surprise he felt off his face as he looked up at her. She didn't look like any Rosarita he would have expected. She was in her 30s, he guessed, and sleekly beautiful in a red gown that hugged her body. She was also Chinese. Or at least part Chinese, with smooth golden skin, almond-shaped eyes, and a mass of lustrous black hair piled high on her head. The kid lifted a finger to the brim of his hat.
I don't mean to intrude, ma'am. I figured to do a little business,
but I got here just as the ruckus broke out.
You're lucky you didn't arrive a little earlier. You might have gotten in the way of a stray bullet.
Yes, ma'am. I can't argue with that.
Come back later. We're closed for the time being.
Actually, I'd like to talk to you for a few minutes, if that's all right. I could come upstairs.
I don't go with the customers.
But you are Rosarita.
That's the name I use now, yes. What business is that of yours?
I'm looking for someone you probably used to know.
You're going to be persistent, aren't you?
You want me to run this fella off, ma'am?
I doubt if you could. He doesn't look like he would run off easily. All right, come on. But I warn you, if you're looking for trouble, you'll regret it.
No trouble, ma'am. You have my word on that.
He moved past Brady and started up the stairs. Rosarita took the kid into her office. She kept a pistol on him the entire time.
What do you want?
How did you come to be called Rosarita?
You mean because I'm Chinese? I worked here for the original Rosarita. Before she died, she told me she wanted me to take over the place and keep her name on it. I thought if this was going to continue to be Rosarita's, the woman who ran it should be known by that name, too.
Rosarita slipped her gun into a hidden pocket in her dress and turned to a sidebar.
Would you like something to drink?
No, thanks.
Rosarita poured a drink for herself into a squat crystal glass. She sipped it as she turned back to him.
You didn't come here to ask me about my name. You wouldn't have been so insistent about that. Ask what you came to find out.
I'm looking for work.
I don't hire men, except to keep things peaceful here in the house. You have the look of a man who would be a lot more capable of that than Brady, but I doubt if I could afford you.
I'm not talking about working in a whorehouse. No offense.
None taken. What are you talking about, then?
I reckon you know. Gun work. Gehenna's got a reputation as a wide-open town. I figured somebody around here might have need of my services. The madam of the best whorehouse in town generally knows all the men in town who have money. I was hoping you could point me in the right direction.
The man you want to see is Matthew Harrison. At least that would be the case if he didn't already have several perfectly capable gunmen working for him.
Craig and the others I saw leaving the place after they'd gunned down those three men in your parlor?
That's right. I'm afraid if you showed up at Harrison's and tried to take the place of any of them, you'd wind up as dead as those poor men downstairs.
Maybe. But if Harrison's the only one hiring around here...
It's more than that. It's only been a few weeks since he showed up, but in that time, Harrison has taken over almost everything in Gehenna. Nobody knows what happened to George Hopkins, who owned the saloon before Harrison took it over and renamed it after himself. All the other businesses have to pay him a share of their profits now, or else bad things happen to them that no one can explain. But everyone knows who's behind them. Why the hell am I telling you all this? If you did wind up working for Harrison, you could tell him I was trying to stir up sentiment against him.
It sounds to me like he doesn't have any trouble doing that himself. I don't see how a man can take over a whole town with only four gun wolves, though.
Oh, he has a dozen other men working for him. Craig, Woods, Malone, and Dakota Pete are just the worst of the bunch.
You said Harrison's only been here in town for a short time?
A little over a month. That just goes to show you a lot can change in a hurry if there are enough guns involved.
Do you know where he came from?
No idea.
What does he look like?
That's it. I knew that there was something about you that seems familiar, and now I've finally figured out what it is. You look a little like him. Harrison, I mean. You're younger, and he has a beard, but there's a definite resemblance.
I do? I might have to see that for myself.
The woman moved closer to him, close enough that she was able to lift a hand and rest her fingers lightly against his chest. She looked up at him with dark brown eyes.
You should stay away from Harrison's place. You don't need to get yourself killed.
A man's got to eat and have a place to stay.
Stay here for a few days.
You've already got a bouncer.
I didn't say I wanted to hire you.
I don't have enough money to afford to stay.
You wouldn't have to pay.
Her hand slid up to his shoulder and stole behind his neck. He felt the warmth of her breath on his cheek.
You said you don't go with the customers.
You wouldn't be a customer if you weren't paying.
Sorry. I appreciate the offer, but I'll have to pass.
The opportunity won't come around again, you know.
I know. There may be some cold, lonely nights when I regret the decision and call myself a damned fool, but that's the way it is.
You are a damned fool. You're going down there, aren't you? You're going to get yourself killed.
No,
I'm going to see a man about a job.
You men and your guns. It always comes down to that, doesn't it?
Not always, but often enough.
Then go. Go on, damn you. If you live, don't come back here. I don't want to see you.
Fine. I'm obliged for the information. And I'm sorry about what happened downstairs.
It was none of your doing. It'll happen again as long as Harrison and his men are running things around here. And you, you'll either be one of them, or you'll be dead soon enough.
Back outside, the kid turned in the direction Craig and the other gunman had gone earlier. His steps took him past the old man, who was sitting in the chair again.
El Diablo walks the night, the man who wears Satan's face.